Stephen Luman is a financial advisor in Morgan Stanley's Bethesda office. Stephen is compensated. The Eric Stewart Show and WMAL be featured on the show. This is not a solicitation nor intended to provide individually tailored investment advice. The strategies and or investments referenced may not be suitable for all investors. Morgan Stanley Smith Barney LLC, Morgan Stanley, its affiliates, and Morgan Stanley Financial Advisors do not provide tax or legal advice. The views expressed herein are those of the presenter and may not necessarily reflect the views of Morgan Stanley Smith Barney LLC, member SIPC.
Now, back to the Eric Stewart Show on WMAL.
I'd like to welcome back John Yevman from the Capital Bay Group at Morgan Stanley. He's a financial advisor and senior portfolio manager from Morgan Stanley in Bethesda, Maryland. John is a regular on the show from time to time. We bring him in because even as I'm the quarterback of your real estate process, it's good to think of your real estate as a part of the overall process of financial management. John, what are we going to talk about today?
Hey, Eric. Thanks for having me. We're going to talk about a principle that comes from Stephen Covey's great book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Today, we're going to cover habit number 2, which according to Covey is begin with the end in mind.
Okay. So how does that relate to wealth management?
Well, it matters on a couple levels. First of all, if you don't know where you're going, how will you get there?
Mm-hmm. Right? Right.
So by that, I mean, what are your goals? It's amazing how many people really don't know that. How much will they cost? When will you want to accomplish these goals? So what's the timing? Many times we have clients that have a chunk of money and they're good savers, but they don't really know how much they're going to ultimately need. And this causes a lot of unnecessary anxiety. So others we have that have just stuck their head in the sand and they're really afraid to know where they stand.
Mm-hmm.
So there are people, you know, that go to work and they work so hard, but they've not put enough time and effort into the things that they, one day they wish they would, and they may live with some regrets, like spending time with their family.
Okay, so what do my listeners need to do on a practical level?
So there's really 3 steps, Eric. First is clarify your professional or business and your personal goals. Clarify your business and personal goals and determine how your business and personal life connect and coexist. Because mm-hmm. you only have 24 hours in a day.
Mm-hmm.
You have to spend your time between those two endeavors. Second, reassess the time you spend in your business and your personal endeavors. On the other show or next week, I'm going to talk about what some of those endeavors are and how you can look at each of those and try to determine what your time allocation is. And then the third step is gain a clear understanding of the resources that you will need to accomplish your goals and how and when to best utilize these resources.
Okay, so how would you categorize the personal goals that people have?
So here's a good way to think about that. Think about 5 buckets,
mm-hmm.
and then here are the buckets, and each of them need their own resources. So first is retirement. Mm-hmm. So how will you replace your paycheck? Second is children. So whether you're setting up 529s or grandchildren. The third is family legacy. Like, do you want to leave a beach house within your family when you're gone? The fourth is charity. What kind of charities am I giving to? How will I give to those charities in a tax-efficient manner? And fifth is owning a future business. A lot of people that are business owners want to continue to do that, but they just want to get liquid on the business that they have.
Okay, so what's the process to making sure you're going to meet those goals?
So typically the planning process involves, first off, taking an inventory of your assets and liabilities, so a personal financial statement. The second is listing your goals with a dollar value and what it will take to accomplish each of them. And then the third is listing the dates by which you hope to achieve these goals. According to Harvard University, a study that was done in 1979, the probability of actually seeing your goals accomplished goes up by an exponential factor when you get very specific and write these goals down.
All right. John Yepman, he's with the Morgan Stanley here in Bethesda, Maryland. He's a financial advisor with the Bethesda office. John, thanks for joining us today. If any of our listeners want to get a hold of you and maybe come up with a plan through your group, how would they do that?
Eric, best if they call my office. My direct line is 301-961-1808.
Okay, again, that number is 301-961-1808 to reach John Yepman personally. Thanks, John, for being a part of the show.
Thanks a lot, Eric.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's nothing fun about being on welfare, and there's a new Kansas law that aims to keep it that way. Republican Governor Sam Brownback signed House Bill 2258 into law a couple of weeks back, And the measure means Kansas families receiving government assistance will no longer be able to use those funds to visit swimming pools, see movies, go gambling, or get tattoos on the state's dime. Those are just a few of the restrictions contained within the law that aims to tighten regulations on how poor families spend their government aid. And so that will go into effect on July the 1st. The measure, called the HOPE Act by supporters, provides an opportunity for success. Brownback said in a statement after signing the bill, "It's about the dignity of work and helping families move from reliance on a government pittance to becoming self-sufficient by developing the skills to find a well-paying job and build a career." You've heard me talk in the past about a great book called The Tragedy of American Compassion, which focuses on the enabling of poverty and the disabling of self-reliance and the capability of so many people who rely on the income that they receive all the time from our government. You know that our food stamp program has tripled in size over the last 6 to 7 years. Yes, it's hard to believe it. There's maybe 42 to 43 million Americans who receive food stamps, which aren't stamps any longer. It's like a credit card they receive, and they can go spend it on whatever they want. You know, we're really just impoverishing our own people by giving them free money without any expectation that they'll work. You know, there was a time in this country where we expected people to work to eat. And if you didn't work, you didn't eat. And frankly, I appreciate what this governor is doing to try to bring people back to a sense of responsibility. It really is about giving them an opportunity for success. So my hat's off there for that change in their government. So, hey, you know, during the American Revolutionary War, the use of any lumber cut 1 foot or greater in width was actually forbidden on the interior of new homes constructed by colonists. Again, during the American Revolutionary War, the use of any lumber that was cut a foot or greater in the width was forbidden to be used. So I'm going to tell you the rest of the story. Something called windfall profit. You've heard that. You've used it probably. Maybe just in a conversation. Oh, that was a windfall profit. It was unexpected profit that somebody got. Well, it goes back to the American Revolutionary War because lumber that was cut that was a foot wide or greater was sent to Britain to be used in shipbuilding to support their war effort. And the detection of such wall paneling or flooring by the British Army usually resulted in colonist imprisonment. There was, however, a clause that allowed certain lumber to be used. If a tree fell on one's property through an act of God, such as a severe storm, the lumber could be used for any purpose. Further, it could be sold for a great deal of money. Thus, if a number of trees fell during a nor'easter, they could bring a sizable stipend for the colonist. This monetary reward was called, you guessed it, windfall profit. Well, that's the rest of that story. Hey, have you heard about our population slowdown here in the D.C. area? After decades of expansion, new census numbers are showing that the population growth in the Washington region has slowed dramatically, with Fairfax and Arlington County and Alexandria seeing more people move out of those communities than move in over the past year. That's the first time I've actually heard this. The numbers offer stark evidence that a region defined for much of the last half century for its affluence and growth is entering a different phase. When federal spending cuts are slowing, job gains and declining suburbs are presenting new challenges for local leaders, even as pockets of extreme wealth continue to boom. The portrait is emerging at a time when the nation is recovering from a deep recession, as you know, and the Washington region, we've largely avoided that, thankfully. I'm reading from an article from the Washington Post written by Antonio Olivo from April the 19th. "Especially for young people, this may be the tip of the iceberg," said William Frey, who's a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. "If the broader picture is that there are more jobs in a place like Atlanta or Charlotte, then maybe some of that is pulling people away from D.C. The new census estimates show a dramatic trend in out-migration last year, with the number of people moving away on the rise and the number moving in going down. Even in the district, a city of 650,000 residents where condos are popping up across the skyline and newly fashionable neighborhoods are quickly becoming unaffordable for long-term residents, net migration went down last year from about 10,000 in 2013 to just half of that." All right, so condo owners, beware. If you're thinking that you're going to crest your price in the next 2 years, 3 years, or 4 years, you may want to consider, if you're thinking about moving, putting your home up for sale sooner rather than later. You've heard me talk about this slowdown in job growth in this area. I had the privilege of speaking with Dr. Stephen Fuller, who's the chief economist at George Mason University, and I often quote him, "We've had 20,000 jobs grown in a year in all of Maryland, D.C., and Virginia, with a net job loss in Montgomery County of 300 jobs. Yeah, you don't hear that in the news, except here. Loss of 300 jobs from December 13 through December 14. Folks, that's Montgomery County. Our senators, our congressmen, our governor, they all got to pay attention. We're seeing jobs not grow the way they should. And unfortunately, that is not a good omen for real estate. I'll be right back.